Welcome back to the Chasing Tone podcast. Today, my special guest is a guy you probably know as Samurai Guitarist. His name is Steve Onotera. Steve's a guitar player, a songwriter, and a popular YouTuber from the YouTube channel Samurai Guitarist. Steve, welcome to the Chasing Tone podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So, I'll just kind of jump right in here because some people may know who you are, some people may not know. I first found you from, you had a video about playing the Super Mario Brothers.
Yes, one of my favorites.
So, and I thought it was fantastic because if I recall right, it was, you were playing Super Mario Brothers 3 on, strictly on guitar, like every part on guitar, right?
Not quite. So what I did for that one was I recreated the themes, and Super Mario Brothers 3, that was one of those games that I grew up playing. And so those songs have a lot of sentimental value to me. Mm-hmm. And so I recreated the songs, kind of re-envisioned them a little bit. And then what I did is I played all the sound effects of that game. This whole soundtrack happened to a playthrough of the game. And the soundtrack would have had sound effects. And so I recreated those sound effects all with guitar.
Wow. Yeah, that was absolutely crazy. And then from there, I've just, you know, I've watched pretty much all your videos.
Oh, I appreciate it.
So, all right. So, if you can kind of walk everyone through how you got to where you are now, which is basically you have hundreds of thousands of subscribers on YouTube and your channel is pretty much entirely based on guitar based themes.
Yeah. I mean, I can trace it back. There's a long answer and then there's a shorter one, and I'll try to split the difference a little bit.
Sure.
But, I started music school and I started music school a little later than a lot of my peers. I'd been out of high school for about 5 years, and I kind of went into music school really, really thinking about how am I going to make money doing this whole music thing. Because I'd worked in a music store, I'd seen a lot of people who hadn't really figured out how to get over that hurdle. And so that was something that was always on my mind from day one. And I had another very close friend of mine who was also kind of thinking in the same mindset. Him and I clicked because of that right away. Fast forward a couple of years, and he joined a band, and they had a massive viral hit. Seeing success like that was something that just really opened my eyes to the power of YouTube. It was five of them playing one guitar. And as soon as that video blew up, it was the first time I'd ever seen someone have that kind of success. And it seemed so attainable to me because here's my former roommate, someone who I've played in plenty of bands with, someone who's on the same musical level as I am, having all these great fortunes come their way. And so that kind of laid the seed in my brain that there's some power to this YouTube thing. Fast forward a couple of years. I'd graduated from school and I was trying to figure out how I was going to make a name for myself in this industry. And I had been doing a fair bit of session work up in Toronto where I went to school. And I was enjoying it, but I knew that wasn't what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I wanted to create something that I could put all my efforts behind, something that was truly my baby, something that I could build from the ground up. And I didn't know how I was going to do that. At first, I thought what I was going to do was start a band playing kind of mainstream country style music. And the goal with that band was we were going to take the Canadian country world by storm. And the way we were going to do that was by making these crazy YouTube videos that would gain traction. So one thing led to another. That band didn't work out. I realized how much effort actually went into this stuff. And somewhere along the line, I posted a video on my Instagram channel. And it had, I think it was just me playing guitar, nothing overly fancy. But for the first time in my life, there was a couple of people who I didn't know who watched my video and liked it and commented. And I thought that was pretty cool. Then I did it again the next day. And then I did it again the next day. And then I decided after that I was getting some traction, I thought, well, what if I took some of these ideas that I have for these crazy videos and just put them out on my Instagram platform? Because now I had somewhere to release things to the world. And I would put out these short little concepts of these videos that would later go on to be full videos on my YouTube page. But I would post these short little 15-second videos, and there was a common question that was there, and it was, where can I find the full video of this? What's your YouTube channel? And it was just an obvious next step for me to open up the YouTube page and take all these ideas that I'd kind of been backlogging for a while and create them myself. And then one thing led to another. Within the first couple months of doing it, I had a video that gained a fair bit of traction on Reddit. And from there, I was just kind of working my way up that ladder step by step. 100 subscribers, one subscriber, one at a time. Every now and then something would happen where a bunch would come in. And so it was just from there, just a slow incremental step to making this my full-time job.
Yeah, I think I actually got in right around 30,000 subscribers or so, somewhere near that era.
Yeah, that was about almost two years ago. And there's a lot of people who showed up to my channel around that time because for whatever reason, the YouTube algorithm, the thing that recommends videos to people, just loved me for that month and showed my video to tons of people.
Huh? Did you ever figure out like how that happened, or did that just seem like a bit of luck?
I think it was a bit of luck. I've heard there's a couple other people who are also in music who do similar stuff that I do who also saw that major bump there. And the leading theory is that they changed the algorithm and just channels like mine were, well, because there was a lot of channels at this time that were having very negative results and a lot of people complaining about it. I saw the benefit of it. And so I think it was just a matter of a little bit of luck, right place, right time, I guess.
And you were also a songwriter before all this happened though, right? Or did I was looking at your website and it said that you did a fair bit of songwriting in Nashville.
Well, that was kind of my plan, and that's how I thought I was going to, for a while, that's where I thought I was going to make my living in music. Around the third year of my college degree, I kind of got burnt out on playing guitar. I was playing a lot of guitar, playing a lot of jazz music, just playing guitar, practicing guitar all day long, and I just got burnt out on it. And I just needed to take a break, and I realized the thing that really brought me a lot of enjoyment was songwriting. Taking nothing, essentially, and turning it into this thing. I like creating. I think at the root of my personality is someone who likes to create things. When I was a kid, I used to just build massive cities out of Lego and stuff like that. And so I think I took this break from practicing guitar and I just focused on songwriting. And I realized I really had a knack for that, more so than I think I do for guitar. I think I never was a child prodigy or anything like that. And I went to school with a lot of people who were a lot better than I was. And that got me thinking, well, I mean, if these guys are so good, if they're going to have trouble making a living, if there's not jobs for them, how am I ever going to do something? And then I realized I really love songwriting. I really love creating. And when I first graduated from school, I was doing the session work to make some money. And I thought, okay, if I can get down to Nashville, I can start writing music. I have a bit of a knack for this country thing. I'm going to pursue that. However, being a Canadian, you can't just pick up and move down to Nashville. You need to be able to justify that. You need to be able to submit those forms and make it look like you're qualified to enter the country.
Right.
And so that that ties into the band. My idea with the band was we're going to get this fortune and success in Canada, and people would recognize us. And through that band, I would eventually gain what I needed to move down to Nashville. And when that band ran its course, I would move down there and write country music full time. Of course, that didn't pan out like that, but that's how that came to be.
Huh. So what era was this? Like what years were you in Nashville?
I've got roughly my degree on my wall. So 2013 is when I graduated.
Okay.
I never lived in Nashville. I just spent a lot of time going down there. I used to drive down from my hometown of Winnipeg, and it's about a 20-hour drive, so I would drive down as much as I could, usually three times a year or so. Mm-hmm. And I've got some friends who live down there, and they'd let me stay with them. And I'd get my foot in the door, so about 2013 to 2015, I was going down there fairly frequently. And then I just stopped going down when I got pretty busy with the YouTube thing. And then I, instead of going to Nashville, I started going down to LA, where I spend a fair bit of time now.
Oh, do you? I didn't know that. That's great.
So, well, the nice thing is I've got some family there, and there's a lot going on in the YouTube world there. And so it's a great place to be for that stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So what were you studying in college again?
I got a degree in, I'll read it. It's on my wall. Bachelor of Music. Oh, that's it. Bachelor of Music. I think it's a performance-based degree. And the way it was the first couple of years, it was jazz-based. And you just played jazz. You listened to jazz. You studied jazz, the history, all of that. Your ensembles were jazz, just jazz, jazz, jazz. And then the last 2 years, you were able to branch out into some different areas, like songwriting and production, where I kind of focused my efforts. And it was great. I mean, a great experience. I don't think I'd be able to do what I do now without those skills. And I think that's where I developed a lot of those skills. It helped me think about the business side of things. And there's a couple really cool teachers that I had as well. One that stands out is a Canadian rock star named Rick Emmett, who was in a band called Triumph, and they had that song "Lay It on the Line."
Yep.
And so he was one of my teachers, and just talking to someone who had really done it, who had made it. I mean, when they were at their prime, they were playing stadiums, they were touring the world. Being exposed to that, I think it instills a sense of this is possible. When you see someone and you meet someone, and it doesn't become just a dream anymore, it becomes an attainable goal, whatever those goals happen to be. But growing up in Winnipeg, I never knew successful musicians. I worked at a music store, and I got to meet a lot of people who worked in the music industry in one way or another, but who were never, you know, playing stadiums.
Right.
And seeing that and being exposed to that just kind of made it seem like a realistic possibility to me.
That's fantastic. So I have to ask you this. Why the name Samurai Guitarist?
Well, so that name came to me when I was making those Instagram videos. And my Instagram handle was just my name, Steve Onatera. But I kind of got to thinking, I was like, this is not the easiest name to spell in the world. It's not the most catchy title. If I want to kind of build something out of this, I want to create something that's that people remember. If someone asks me what I do, and I tell them I run a YouTube channel, they're going to ask me, well, what's your channel called? And if I say it's Steve Onatera, they're going to be like, okay. And then they're going to forget that by the time they get home. However, if I say it's Samurai Guitarist, people are like, yeah, that's memorable. And so I think I was just thinking about the brand that I could build with that. And there's a lot of fun that I've had and can have with that title as well. Like I wear in some of my videos, I wear the Japanese headband, and I'll on my walls, I've got pictures of like traditional Japanese artwork and stuff like that. It's just, to me, it was a fun, interesting thing that was a brandable concept.
Huh. I always wondered that. I didn't know that.
I mean, also on top of that, I have Japanese heritage, so it seemed like an obvious choice. And I don't remember exactly coming up with a name, but I don't think I ever really considered anything else. I don't know. It's one of those things that just made sense.
So there wasn't that moment in the shower. You're like, I got it. Samurai Guitarist. That's it.
Nope. Maybe there was. I don't remember it. So it can't have been that substantial.
See, because I can remember whenever I became Wampler Pedals. Before that, my company was going to be called Indie Guitarist, like as in Indianapolis Guitarist.
Yep.
And that was just really confusing and not really descriptive of what I was trying to do.
Right.
And so, of course, there's Keeley Electronics, Robert Keeley. And I'm like, I'll just make it like Wampler Pedals. That seems like the logical choice to me.
Cool. Yeah, it does. And it's a catchy name and it works.
So, all right. So, kind of backtracking a little bit, your Super Mario Brothers 3 video, for example, and I know you've done several of like video game, I don't want to call them covers, but for lack of a better descriptor, kind of cover.
Sure, covers.
So what inspired you to come up with those ideas? Like, were you just sitting around playing a video game, like, you know, with a guitar in your hand?
The very first one. I mean, a lot of my inspiration comes... To rewind a bit to the songwriting thing, one of the things that I was taught as a songwriter was that you got to open up your eyes, you got to open up your mind to be receiving of ideas at all times. Even if you're not actively looking for it, you want to walk through the world in songwriting glasses, which means that if an idea comes your way, your radar is ready to catch it. Your eyes are not necessarily always looking for it, but you can pick up on those little things, even if they come your way, and then you turn them into a song. And so I took that principle and turned it into YouTube. Like I walk through the world ready to receive ideas for YouTube videos. And sometimes they're very subtle, but sometimes they're more obvious. So I remember I was just browsing Facebook, and a video came around where it was just a guy in a violin, and he was playing along to the original Mario Brothers. Mm-hmm. And it was just him playing along, and then whenever you'd hit a coin, he would make that sound, and then he'd go back to playing the theme. And so I saw that, and I was like, well, I could probably just take this to another level. And that's, yeah, that was the inspiration, just seeing that guy do that.
So how long did it take you to learn that?
Oh, those ones take a long time. I don't do those I don't do those as often because they are a serious endeavor. I don't remember exactly how long that one took, but I recently did a cover of the Mario 64 soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And I started working on that one probably, I want to say, October, and I released it last month.
Wow, that's a lot of work for one video.
Yep.
It's almost like making a movie.
It's a huge undertaking because that video, I think it had 10 songs. And so I need to record about 10 songs. Usually they're only a minute long or so. But that in itself takes quite a while. And then I need to record the video game playthrough. And sometimes I'll change up what I do for the video game playthrough. So in the Mario 64, I took clips of the Mario game and I made it look like Mario was dancing or Bowser was dancing to the music. Right. And so it takes a while to edit that. And then from there, I need to shoot each one of those individual parts. So there's lots of instruments that get involved. And so I conceptualize it all and slowly work on those parts. And it's an endeavor. I would say it'd be like a month of full-time work to make one of those, wow, maybe more.
So did you know that was going to be like a viral hit, like from the get-go? Did you have a pretty strong feeling about that? Or did that seem like it was completely luck of the algorithm?
Back then I consider my most inspired years because that's when I just had this wealth of ideas. And I kind of thought everything was going to be a viral hit. didn't turn out to be the case, but I kind of was like, oh, this is a great idea. I think this has the potential to blow up. And then, but the difference was back then I had no schedule. I was just putting out a video whenever I would finish it. And so I could spend a month working on a video, or I could spend 2 weeks devoting to one video. Whereas now, where I'm trying to get stuff out pretty regularly, I can't just take off a month and a half to make one video, not knowing whether or not that's going to get a lot of traction.
Right. Right. So, and did you do a lot of video work before this, or did you just kind of learn how to do the not only the video taking, but the video editing as well?
I did a little bit. I dabbled with it. I had a camera, and when I was at school, I offered to like shoot my friends' bands when they would go into the studio and just like charge them a couple bucks. It was just a small little side business that I ran. And so I had an idea of how it worked, but the real learning has kind of been every step of the way doing the YouTube stuff. I look at the videos that I used to make and the things that I would do to make them happen, and I realized how horribly inefficient I was. And so I had no traditional training in video. My training is purely YouTube videos and Googling gotcha. Questions.
Gotcha. All right. So, you did a video that was, I think it was called One Man Plays 8 Instruments. It's a redo of a cover of Bob Marley's Three
Little Birds.
Three Little Birds, right? And you're playing all the instruments at the same time. So your bass guitar is on the floor. You're playing that with your feet. You have like a little tambourine thing on that. You're playing a keyboard with one hand, a ukulele with the other hand, and you're playing a harmonica all at the same time.
That one was insanely hard. That one almost broke my brain.
I mean, like, how much pre-production goes into something like that?
That one, I was just practicing it for hours every day for, I don't know, an extended period of time. I would just spend like an hour or two every day just like practicing that really, really slow. And it's not something like that. It's not like I'm trying to think of all these things at once. You just go beat for beat. And I would say, okay, on this beat, my foot needs to be here. My hand needs to flick this. And my other hand needs to play the keyboard. I just need to remember that one thing. Foot down, flick this ukulele and play this chord. I would do that, and then I would add the next beat. And then I would say, okay, well, on that next beat, then I need to not play on the ukulele, but play this chord. And so I would just practice that really slow, one bar at a time, the same way that you'd practice a new solo that you're learning or something.
Right.
And that one, really, really, really slow. I think I did one instrument at a time, and then maybe I did two of them. That one took a long time.
Wow. Yeah. That
wasn't a lot of fun. It felt great when I finally got the take, but yeah, that one wasn't a ton of fun to prepare for.
I bet by the time that you actually recorded that, you probably hated that song.
I was just so ready to move on.
Yep. All right. So, you have, as well with, of course, we have the video game stuff. We have the videos where you're playing multiple instruments, but you also have things like stories behind seven famous guitars.
Yep.
Or little things that make a big difference in your playing, things that are more helpful to, I guess, what I would call like your average guitar player. Not where the other things are really entertaining, but I'm not going to, you know, I'm not probably not going to sit down and learn note for note what you're doing on a cover of Super Mario Brothers. But,
right.
You know, I am going to listen to, you know, little things that make a big difference in my playing so I can gain something from that. Like me as a player, for example. What's your favorite type of videos to make? Like which is it more along the more drawn out, the more conceptualized stuff? Or is it more like the seven famous guitar stuff?
I mean, those ones are, I like those ones because they're easy to make. It's going to take me a day to write the script for that, a day to edit it, and I can probably finish, or a day to shoot it and edit it. So that's a 2-day ordeal, which is also one of the reasons why I did those videos. Before I started doing this full time and generating a full time income, I realized that I needed to figure out a way of creating videos that people would like that didn't require massive amounts of effort, like the one where I played all those instruments. And so I thought, okay, well, what else can I offer people? And one of the things I've done a lot in my life is teach guitar lessons. There are a lot of guitar lessons on YouTube, so I started thinking about what can I do that's a little bit different than what other people do. And I tried to look at things that were a little less specific, a little bit broader. Like I said, I wasn't going to I'm not going to teach people how to play Stairway to Heaven. There are a lot of people who have already done that. The world doesn't need another video on that subject. But things like that, I thought, well, I don't really see a ton of this on YouTube. I wonder if this could take off. And then I would just try it out, and people liked it. And suddenly I was able to make a couple more videos. I could still do those crazy big concepts, but I could get out a couple of videos in between there. And as I ventured into that world, I thought, okay, well, what else could I do? I really like musical history. I read a ton of biographies when I was a kid on rock stars and stuff like that, and my favorite bands, and I studied the history of a lot of music in school. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe I can offer a little bit of trivia or a little history in these shows. And from there, it's just seeing which ones are received well. And so the stories behind the famous guitars, people love those ones, and so I'm going to keep doing them. And then there's been ones where people haven't really enjoyed, and so that's cool too. And the Sensei series, which is like the instructional stuff, that's also, those ones are easy enough to get out. And also I enjoy them. So I like those ones because it's a fairly painless endeavor to create those. But at the same time, the ones that take a long, long time to do are often a little bit more creatively fulfilling, right? Especially if it's original concepts or original songs. I mean, that's really my favorite stuff. There's just less of a market for an original piece of music.
Right. Unfortunately. Yeah. But and just like that, like I myself have thought about doing like maybe a pedal demo where I can write a song around that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the end of the day, no one wants to see me, some, you know, pedal designer dork, write and record a song.
Yeah. I mean, you got to think of creative ways to incorporate that. And so that's one of the things that I try to do, is because I love writing music. And so I've tried to figure out which ways can I incorporate that into videos that are marketable and shareable and that whole thing. And so one of the ones that I recently did was I took a bunch of negative comments. I found like the meanest comments that I could on my channel.
I saw that.
And then I turned them into robot synth pop from the 80s. And that to me was a ton of fun. I wrote like five songs and was able to put out totally original stuff. But it had that shareability factor.
Right, right. That was brilliant, I thought. I wish I would have thought of that. That was fantastic.
So be my guest to rip, do that same concept.
Still that, right? so you're now doing basically making a living entirely from YouTube, right? I mean, I know you have Patreon as well. Is it do you have other income streams, or is it just video creation?
So everything stems from YouTube, which doesn't mean that all the money comes from YouTube, but everything kind of has stemmed from my channel. So like you mentioned, Patreon, that's a fairly large portion of my income as well. And that's basically a Kickstarter or a crowdfunding campaign on a rolling basis. So it happens every month. And so through that, I offer a lot of prizes. I do a monthly giveaway for that, a bunch of stuff like that. And so that's an important piece of the puzzle as well. But there are other things, putting up Amazon links that link to products that I talk about. If people click on those and buy those products, that's a little bit of money that goes into my pocket. Not a lot. That usually makes up like beer money for the month. But
right.
but little things like that. There's a lot of things like that. I'll sell MP3s of a lot of songs on iTunes and whatever. And that's another little part of the stream that flows into the river. I've recently had a couple of people reach out to start doing things off the platform, kind of in the more traditional realms, and projects like that kind of come about. And so
can you give us an example, or is that kind of secret?
So right now there's nothing that I have got like contract signed or ready to work on. But last year I shot a video for a webzine, like a web magazine.
Yep.
And through them, like I did a video for their webzine of me just like playing my hockey stick guitar. I have a guitar that I made out of a hockey stick. And so they shot that and flew me out to Montreal to shoot that. And so little things like that come up. But it all stems from the YouTube fan base. That's where people recognize me from.
Right.
Every now and then I'll offer a couple lessons and I'll open some slots. Like if I've got not much going on that month, I might say, hey guys, if you want to do a lesson, go to this website and see if there's an availability.
Right.
And so I do some of that, not as much as I used to, but again, that all stems from the YouTube.
Right. So do you sell merch?
I'm working on it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I finally have made an effort to get some designs done, and it's in process. And I know it's one of those things that I've been meaning to do for a long time, but there's only so many hours in the day, and I finally kind of made that jump to make it happen.
And you've got to sleep at some point, right? I totally,
yeah, exactly.
Totally understand. So what is your day-to-day look like? You wake up in the morning, what do you do?
Well, I wake up in the afternoon because
we're musicians,
I'm a musician, and I don't,
right?
Do mornings. Yeah.
My morning's about 10 or 11 as well, so I get it.
Yeah, I don't. That's one of the reasons I got in this industry, because I hate mornings. And so I'll avoid them like the plague. But I'll wake up at some point in the afternoon, usually make myself a little bit of lunch, do a quick workout. And then from there, I'll often have just like housekeeping things that I need to take care of, whether that be cleaning or just like doing emails or just like things like that, that usually takes up a little bit of time. And so I'll usually take care of that in the afternoon, make some dinner. And then from there, it's pedal to the metal. So as soon as we get off this podcast, I'm probably going to be shooting a video and editing that video till the wee hours in the morning. And then repeat. I try to take weekends off. I think it's important to have a little bit of balance in life and set aside some time to just recoup, or else you're going to burn yourself out,
yeah,
real quick.
Oh, yeah.
And so the other thing I do, like I have sports that I play. I play hockey once a week and I play soccer once a week. And that'll usually take place sometime in the early evening. And that kind of breaks up my day a little bit too.
Okay. Yeah. That's we don't play much hockey here in Indiana. But I know it's very popular where you're from.
Yes, very.
Plus, I'm too much of a wimp and I'd probably get my teeth knocked out. So so let me ask you this. Let's say someone listening to this, they want to start their own YouTube channel around guitar. Should they niche it down or should they keep it broad? What would you tell them?
Well, I think there's two ways that you can do something and find success in it. And I would say, first of all, don't start it thinking that you're going to do it professionally, because it's, at this point, it's a flooded market and it's tough. And I think it's like, you got to just do it for fun first. And then if it takes off, then power to you. But if you're going to try to do it professionally right away, it's a huge hill to climb. I would say the best thing to do is you want to, you're going to find success in one or two of two ways. The first way is to do something that other people have done and just do it better, which is very, very hard to do and something that I've rarely been able to do myself. The other way is to do something that nobody has ever done before. And so what that is, to me, that's the more exciting path to go down. And so if you have like a specific niche that you work in, that could be something that no one else has done, and you can create a little bit of a following that way. And from there, you can branch out a little bit and build what you're doing. Or you could try to do something that everyone else has done and just do a crazy production level, and there's a good chance that that will make some waves as well. But it's tough. It's tough because now more than ever, more and more people are gravitating towards this platform. I mean, I even consider myself, like, I started YouTubing and making videos, I guess that was like 4 years ago or whatever. And I consider myself a latecomer to the whole game. Mm-hmm. And so at this point, some 4 years later, there's even more competition out there.
Right.
So I guess that would be my advice. Have fun with it first and foremost. And then if you do, if it does become something more, then that's amazing. But if not, the goal should be just to have fun with it.
So we spoke a little bit ago about coming up with topics. I wanted to ask you real quick. I was thinking about that. Do you have any tips or other tips or tricks, or like, is there a special software that you might use to find trending topics as you're creating videos?
No, I don't think it makes a ton of sense to try to hop on get in the wake of a trending thing.
Okay.
The reason why I say that is because I've tried it. I've tried to be on top of pop songs, but it just burns you out because as soon as that thing comes out, you need to set everything else aside because videos take a little while to make. And if you're trying to stay on top of trending things, then if you miss the boat, you spend a lot of time putting into something that probably won't ever trend again. Whereas there's more timeless things that you can work on that you aren't pressed for time. And in my experience, every time I've tried to get on a trend, it's very rarely, if ever, paid off.
Gotcha.
So I would say you just got to do. I think at the end of the day, my goal is to make videos that I find fun and that I find interesting and that I would watch. And my theory is if I like them, somebody else out there will like them.
So let me ask you a question. So you were talking about how you had an interest in hockey as well.
Yes.
And I'm in a weird situation similar to this. So I'm sort of putting it into an analogy here. Now that your channel has grown so substantially, let's say that you decided, I want to start a channel around my hockey. Would you put that on Samurai Guitarist or would you start a different channel?
Nope, I would definitely put that on a different channel. I think that's because people come to Samurai Guitarist for a certain type of video. Now, I've got a lot of leeway within that type and I can push the boundaries a bit, but at the end of the day, it's got to be music related. And so I think everything that I do on my main channel, Samurai Guitarist, it's got to tie into music at least a little bit. Even if that's just me talking about my life in music or me talking about something related to music, I think it's got to tie into that. It would be like if I tuned in to The Simpsons and they started talking about politics the entire time without any sort of funny twist. It's like, this is not what I signed up for. So what I would do, and I have done this, is I've started a second channel called Samurai Guitarist 2. And so that's the place that I kind of put anything that I think is interesting and fun that has nothing at all to do with music or maybe does have something to do with music that I wouldn't want to share on the main channel. One of the series I did a little while back was I went and reacted and listened to all my old music from back in the day, like right from when I started. And I re-uploaded a lot of those songs, and they're not great songs. In fact, some of them are pretty terrible. I re-uploaded them to my Samurai Guitarist 2 channel. And that's stuff that I wouldn't necessarily want on the main channel. I don't want that representing what I'm doing now, but mm-hmm. I'd like to have it somewhere on the internet. So Samurai Guitarist 2.
So do you cross-promote those at all?
Not that much. If I do have a video and I am putting some complimentary stuff over on the other channel, then I'll just mention it. Hey, go check out these songs on the second channel. But okay. I mean, I don't think I've even logged into it for a couple months now.
So you're hitting it hard. In other words, totally hitting it hard.
Yep.
Okay. So
I would say, however, the difference would be because so I think people subscribe to me and people watch me.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. It's not a personality channel. It's a channel that has personality to it, I think. But they're not watching me for me. They're watching me for my thoughts on music and my guitar playing.
Right.
And so I think that's, you got to remember that. Now, there are a lot of channels out there that are personality based, where it's just this guy talking to a camera and people are watching for him. And when you do that, then I think it'd be okay to say, oh yeah, I'm going to try playing guitar for this month. I'm going to try snowboarding and I'm going to document it on my YouTube channel.
Right.
In that case, if it's a personality, purely a personality driven channel, then I'd say it makes more sense to put everything on the main one.
More like a Casey Neistat sort of vlog then.
Yeah, exactly. Casey Neistat could make a vlog about him playing guitar for a week, and then he could do something. He could do tech reviews the next week, and it makes sense.
Right, right. What do you like the most about doing YouTube videos for a living?
I mean, that's a tough question to answer. There's a lot of positives, a lot of things that are really, really cool. I think one of my favorite things is when I see the impact that what I do has on people's lives. I think that's incredibly cool. When I get those comments where someone says, "Hey, you've really inspired me to pick up guitar. I haven't played for 5 years, and watching your videos made me want to pick it up again." Or when I see someone cover one of my songs on Instagram, something that I just came up with in my bedroom, and there's somebody across the world playing it. That's incredibly cool. I think at the end of the day, that's probably the big thing. On top of that, just like being my own boss is fun. I don't like having to answer to anyone but myself. I'm the only one who holds myself accountable. And I think that's something I really quite enjoy. On the flip side of it, if I'm feeling lazy and I don't really want to get any work done, I can't slack off. There's not a lot of leeway there, which is maybe one of the downsides.
Right. So were you always pretty much more of an entrepreneurial type person?
I've always been pretty motivated. I wouldn't say necessarily entrepreneurial, because it was all for me when I was young. It was music based. I just wanted to do music. I just wanted to play guitar, and that's what I loved. And then I really realized quickly that you got to think a little bit differently. You got to think outside of the box a little bit if you want to be able to do that for a living, because there's so many people out there who aren't able to. And so I think that's what maybe motivated the entrepreneurial side of that. Because I knew at the end of the day, I want to just play guitar. If I had the option, if someone's just said, "Hey, take your original songs and play them, just go arena to arena playing them, and we'll take care of the rest. We'll take care of all the business. We'll design all the merch. We'll do all that." I would say, sign me up, please. Because it's not the business side of it doesn't get me nearly as excited as the music side.
Right.
It's fun, but that's where my passion lies is the creativeness.
Right. Yep, absolutely. So how do you deal with trolls in the comments?
There's a number of different ways that I've learned to deal with them. So one of them was I made a song using all their comments, and I thought that was kind of fun.
That was brilliant, yes. We have that talent though, Steve.
It very rarely gets to me. I think it's just like one of the things I realized early on. When I first started making videos, it was only nice comments. Only people who liked what I did would ever comment. But I think when that's the case, that means you're not reaching enough people. If you don't have people saying really horrible things to you, you're probably not reaching as many people as you want to online. And so it's just kind of, that's what I remind myself, is the fact that I've got to the point where I get those comments. I've reached enough people that I'm going to statistically get some people who really don't like what I do. And as soon as I started getting those comments, it was like kind of reaffirming. It was like, this is happening. This is growing. This is a good thing. Of course, you got to make sure that the balance is there. If you're getting 5 comments and 3 of them are negative, that's not ideal. But if you're getting 50 comments and one of them is negative, that's a better ratio to aim for.
Right.
On top of that, I have recently, I made a GIF that my friend Jeff and I made at the cabin where he is giving the middle finger to the cabin.
I saw that.
He's giving the middle finger to a bunch of people. And that's kind of one of my go-tos now, because I just think it's just, that's a funny way of dealing with it.
Right.
Ultimately, it doesn't faze me, because I get so many. And I don't know. I feel like it also just reflects more poorly on the person leaving that comment than it does on me. I mean, I imagine what it would take for me to have to go online and leave people hate-filled comments, just ugly hate-filled comments. And the only reason I would ever do that would probably be because I am taking out some other aspect of my life on them. So I kind of remind myself that what kind of person would leave these things? They're not happy people. Happy right. people don't go to some random channel and just berate them. successful people don't do that either. And so I just remind myself that this person, there's no real reason to be upset by it.
Right.
The comments that get to me, I don't consider trolling. I think those are more, if somebody was like a longtime viewer and I recognize their name because they commented a lot and they're like, hey, I used to love what you do, but you've really gone downhill lately, that would get to me. But I think that's different than trolls. I think trolls are just looking for that reaction.
Yeah.
The versus like a productive critique.
Right. Yeah. Like my latest troll comment, someone said I needed to grow more hair on my forehead. You know, like this, just pointless. I'm like, why would you waste your time to say that?
Yeah, that's how I feel. I'm sure if I went to my comments, I could find someone making fun of my hair or something or other. But okay. At the end of the day, I don't know. I like who I am, so right. I'm not going to let someone else take away from that.
There you go. So do you have enough time to play in a band these days?
Nope. Wish I did, but I definitely don't. All my time, I mean, YouTube is a full-time job plus. And it also just takes up a lot of creative effort. I don't think I would want to join a band unless there was some really serious potential for something to happen there. Because as a guitar player, like when I'm not playing guitar, I need a break from it. I just need to not think about music or do music.
Right.
So, I mean, even when I'm driving, I'll listen to the talk radio, I'll listen to sports radio, I'll listen to a podcast. Versus listening, back in the day, I used to listen to music.
Right. But when you're surrounded by it all day long, you need that break.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think just like playing in a band under the right circumstances, I think it would be very interesting if it was like a project that already had legs and that wasn't that I didn't have to be the creative force behind. If someone just said, hey, we're playing a lot and we needed another guitar player and it's low pressure, high reward, then I definitely would be in. But I think what I'd like to do is start developing the Samurai Guitarist Band, where it's still my thing, it still feeds into what I do, but starts incorporating that live element. Because that's one of those things that I miss. I grew up playing live. When I was at school, I played live at least every week, and I would play with people, and now I play guitar with a lot of tracks that I've recorded, but I rarely play with other people.
Right.
And so that's one of those things where I'm starting to think about how can I get this involved in what I do, because it's definitely missing there. And so I think right now I'm working on doing a clinic here in Winnipeg where it would just be me playing guitar probably to my pre-recorded tracks, but it gives me a chance to meet people, meet some of my fans, and just get out there and just put music into the world to people's, like right to people right there.
Right. Right. So one more question. Where do you think guitar is going, especially since, you have a lot of companies that make pedals that aren't really traditional at all, like, Earthquaker or Electro Harmonix or, number of different companies that make really cool pedals, but very non-traditional. It's not something you're going to use in your Lynyrd Skynyrd tribute band. You know what I mean? It's like, so where's your thoughts on where guitar is going overall over the next 5 to 10 years, let's say?
I mean, the music world is such a huge, huge umbrella. And so I think in general, I think mainstream guitar is going to slowly disappear. Maybe not fully disappear, but you're not going to be hearing guitar solos on pop music like you used to. I don't think. I think you'll maybe hear a guitar track now and then. Post Malone's album has a lot of guitar bits on it, but not a lot of like lead lines. I haven't heard a guitar solo on mainstream radio for, I don't even remember when was the last time.
Brad Paisley, probably.
So yeah. I wouldn't even consider that. That would be that branch of mainstream country.
Right.
And I think maybe in the U.S. there's more crossover there. But for us, it's a very distinct difference. There's the country channels and then there's the mainstream stuff that plays like Taylor Swift and Ed Sheeran. And right. I love all that stuff and all that stuff is great. But I don't think we're going to hear maybe it's going to come back as a fad at some point, but I don't think we're ever going to have those guitar-dominated records like we used to. In country music, that's the cool thing about country is that people can still play amazing guitar. You still hear Brad Paisley shredding his guitar and Keith Urban and the Brothers Osborne have a lot of great guitar interludes and solos in them too. So that's the cool thing about that style of music, and I don't think that's going to go anywhere. But I think the flip side is that there's so many niche markets now. The internet has made it so that if I want to listen to anything, that's available at the click of my fingers. Mm-hmm. I can find basically any piece of music that's ever been recorded on my device. I don't have to go to the library or have to go to the record store. I have that immediately accessible to me. And so I think what that creates is you have these small little communities where musicians may never be very well known. They're going to exist in their little niche, and they can create they can thrive in that niche without ever having to be in the mainstream light. And so I think in those communities, guitar will always stay alive, whether it's the metal community, whether it's the funk community, whether it's the jazz community. I think the internet has made it so that those things that would never see mainstream success again will always have a place for people. And so I think what the future of guitar is, like, there'll be everything. I think there'll be everything out there. There'll be people who are playing in traditional blues bands, who people stream on Spotify and who people watch on YouTube. And I think there'll be people who make death metal music, and there'll be people making music that we've never heard of, whether or not it's in the mainstream. I don't know that it will matter. I think as we progress into a society that has access to everything, we'll rely less and less on typical traditional mediums like radio or music TV. I'm sure there will still be elements of that in some way or another, but I don't think – I think the idea of the mainstream maybe one day goes away.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of wondering too. If you see mainstream actually fizzling out because the longer tail of everything else kind of is starting to catch up more and more, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think there are savvy record labels and savvy places like that are having a lot of influence on these places like Spotify with their Spotify playlists and doing things with YouTube. So I think there'll still be an element of that the machines will still influence
right. What
we listen to, but I think it'll be less. Because you think, like, when I was a kid, back in the 90s, if I wanted to listen to a song, I remember just like sitting, like listening to the radio on my Walkman and just waiting for that song to come. My listening to a song was not in my hands. I had to wait for somebody else to provide that for me.
Right.
Otherwise I could go to the record store and buy that thing, but the record store had to carry that album. And so it was a lot of what I wanted to consume was in the hands of other people. And it also costed money. I mean, I can't remember, $20 for a CD or whatever. And I was just like 10 years old. I can't afford that.
Right.
Whereas now, somebody wants to hear one of my songs, it's available in a lot of places. All you need to do is just put it into the Google search engine.
Right.
So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to mention? Any special things you're working on or anything like that?
Not overly.
Okay.
There's always things going on. So to everybody out there listening, head over to www.youtube.com/samuraiguitarist. And if you like what you see, stay tuned and leave me a comment. Tell me that the Wampler podcast sent you over, and I'll make sure I make note of that. But besides that, yeah, just tune in. There's always things going on. And the best way to keep in touch with them is just follow me on, you know, Instagram, Twitter.
Right.
So YouTube.
So your Twitter,
all those good places.
Twitter URL is twitter.com/samuraigit. That's GUIT.
Yep. Because I went to sign up for the Samurai Guitarist and it told me you can't have that many characters. Like, what? This is part of my brand. I like consistency and order, and that was one that got to me a little bit. Facebook was the same too, because I think somebody else has the Samurai Guitarist page.
Yeah. Facebook is the same, Samurai Git. Then Instagram is Samurai Guitarist.
Yep, Instagram is Samurai Guitarist, and same with YouTube. And to me, those are the ones that I use the most. So,
right, fantastic. With Steve Onoterra, Samurai Guitarist, thanks so much for doing this with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
If any of our listeners have any comments or questions, you can email me, podcast@wamplerpedals.com. Steve, if anyone has any questions for you, is there a special email that you'd like to pass that over, or would you rather them hit you up on Twitter, or what's the best place?
Best place is Twitter or Instagram or a YouTube comment.
Okay. Perfect. So thanks for listening. Steve, thanks for doing this with me. Appreciate it. To everyone listening, we'll talk to you next week.